In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, July 29th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Friday at 3 is always the Federal News Countdown, and this week is no exception. Two experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the most important to people who work for the federal government, rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, my experts are Scott Friedlander, the former president and CEO of GTSI and Federal Marketing Experts. Great to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming on the show.
Nice to see you, and thank you, Francis.
Happy to do it. This is the first time you've been on the Countdown show, so your colleague on the panel today and I will be especially kind to you so that you'll come back and do it again.
Well, I appreciate that.
And your counterpart on the panel today is Frank Reeder. He is founder of the Reeder Group, a former OMB official, and worked on the Hill and has a distinguished federal career to his credit. It's good to see you also, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
You have both chosen excellent stories for the Federal News Countdown this week. And we will, of course, as we always do, start off with
number three.
Frank Reeder's third most important federal news story of the week is Ruben Gomez's story from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is U.S. CERT Chief Randy Vickers resigns. Based on your experience in the government, would it be fair for me to put the word resigns in air quotes with this, do you think?
The short answer is I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I chose the story not necessarily because of the particulars of this story, but because I'm concerned that it's symptomatic of a larger problem of a vacuum of leadership in the cybersecurity world generally on the federal side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Vivek Kundra's departure and then the other losses at DHS, I'm concerned that at this point that while I think the administration is starting to get it right, having the right people in place is critical.
What do you think it says management-wise about the fact that I think your observation is correct, where we have some holes in the cybersecurity infrastructure personnel-wise? Same time, we're having a kind of a, not a vacuum, but a very heavy turnover in the national security realm. Not that they're connected at all, but just that in these two very major components of what the federal government is trying to deal with right now, there is a tremendous amount of turmoil, more so, I think, than we normally see at any given time.
Yeah, I think on the DOD side, on the national security side, the story looks a little bit better, largely because there's a fair amount of stability among the cyber types in the five-sided building and in the intelligence community. So I'm less concerned about that than with civilian leadership right now.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, while we've seen stories in recent weeks critical of its efforts, gets it. My concern is that the civil agencies still don't.
Mm-hmm. David D'Agostino from the Government Accountability Office will be on the show with me this afternoon to talk about DOD's cybersecurity efforts. There are some components that the GAO thinks the Defense Department's still missing, and she'll talk about some work that she's done. Frank Reeder's story number three in the countdown is headlined, U.S. CERT Chief Randy Vickers resigns, and you can find it and all of the stories that we're counting down today on federalnewsradio.com. Scott Friedlander, your story number three is a headline, Ceremony Marks Closing of Walter Reed Hospital. This was I don't know if you saw any of the ceremony itself, but it was very moving. And this is a facility that meant a lot of things to a lot of people, even though for the last couple of years, it's kind of had a black mark next to its name.
You know, very moving and is very somber at times. Not only that, it was a flagship hospital for the Army since, I believe, 1909. So mm-hmm. Before my time, maybe not before yours.
It was even before Frank was born.
Yeah, but 1909. But what was interesting, certainly the ceremony and the importance of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people coming through there and being supported and medically treated, but also the infrastructure I thought was critical. And that was really my point. The last hospital that was an active hospital within Walter Reed was 33 years old. So it wasn't 100 years old. It was 33 years old. And obviously, they're shifting that both to Bethesda, the Naval National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, as well as Fort Belvoir. And I thought what was interesting is systemically, infrastructure in the United States has got to continue to improve. You know, we're talking about, obviously, a lot of the funding has gone to roads, bridges, et cetera. But I think it's systemic throughout the United States that we have to continue to move these older facilities to new and improve the cities, the urban centers, things like that. So that was another point within this whole ceremony and the importance of Walter Reed.
That is an interesting thing that, if you remember a couple of years ago, there was the bridge accident in Minnesota, I believe it was.
That's right. The collapse.
That's right. And there was a school of thought around that time that finally this is going to get people to pay attention to infrastructure. And that lasted maybe 3 or 4 months. And we're here now, I guess, this several years later. And we just talked last week on the program about the fact that there's no transportation infrastructure bill that's due through Congress. It's being held up by this debt limit debate, and then all of the continuing resolution stuff that Congress has dealt with. All of these things have really put these other things very low on the priority list. So can you think of if a bridge collapse didn't do it, what do you think might do it?
And to that point, let's remember back just a few years ago at Walter Reed, when the facilities they were using, and there was a lot of issue within that with the way treatment, and it wasn't, I don't think, the medical support and the medical treatment. It was the facility itself. The infrastructure was a major issue. It wasn't doctors and nurses not doing a sensational job. I'm sure they were. They always have. But it was really about the infrastructure, and I think the same holds true to your point.
Scott Friedlander, story number 3 on the countdown this week is headline, Ceremony Marks Closing of Walter Reed Hospital. It's posted, like all of our stories, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we continue on the countdown in just a moment with the number 2 stories of the week as selected by Frank Reeder and Scott Friedlander when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Energy Department and the Defense Department are teaming up to create a new generation of energy-efficient military vehicles. The Advanced Vehicle Power Technology Alliance will drive joint research money into a new generation of engines and transmissions, new lightweight materials, alternative fuels, and hybrid propulsion systems. Researchers even plan to develop technologies that can harvest excess body heat from a vehicle's passengers and turn it into electrical energy that can power various systems in the vehicle.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is cervical cancer screening, featuring Dr. Farzaneh Sabi, an obstetrician-gynecologist with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Cervical cancer is a preventable and curable disease when detected early. Since there usually are no signs of infection or early cervical cancer, screening is critical to timely detection. Starting at age 21, women should start receiving Pap tests. Pap tests are very effective at finding abnormal cells before they turn into cervical cancer. Women aged 30 to 65 should have a Pap test and a high-risk HPV test at least every 3 years. When an HPV infection doesn't go away on its own, it can lead to cervical cancer. Research suggests that these screening tests, along with appropriate treatment, can reduce cervical cancer cases and deaths by as much as 90%. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to see your doctor and get screened for cervical cancer. It can save your life. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
Agencies now have a minimum set of requirements to secure computers and networks for use by teleworkers. The Office of Management and Budget issued guidance outlining 4 basic concepts. These include controlling access to agency information automation and systems that teleworkers use, and safeguarding wireless telecommunications capabilities. OMB also highlighted the need to prevent employees from accessing pornography. Agencies should look to NIST and DHS for additional specific guidance.
If you're in federal IT, you know the pressure to maximize your agency's IT investment. Visit cdwg.com/datacenter to see how our experts have helped federal agencies virtualize, optimize, consolidate their data centers, and reduce ROI pressure. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how you can achieve the benefits of private clouds with a VCE V-Block solution from EMC, Cisco, and VMware.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Monday morning's Federal Drive, the latest on the debt ceiling debate. Any chance of a resolution by the Tuesday deadline? And will furloughed FAA workers get back pay? Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland will tell us about a bill he's co-sponsoring to do just that. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Scott Friedlander and Frank Reeder. And we are up to, on the countdown, the number two stories of the week, as selected by each. And Frank, we'll start with your number two stories. I actually must scold you both before we do story number two. And the idea is that you pick three stories and rank them one, two, three, and you both separately decided to choose two stories each for the number two story of the week. I'm not sure how that happened, but that's not how the show is supposed to work. So at any rate, your number two stories, plural, are one from the New York Times, the paperless cockpit, talking about iPads being used in the cockpits of airplanes. And your other number two is from NextGov. It's Bob Bruin's story about the VA bringing iPhones and iPads onto their network. How are these connected, and what's the significance here, Frank?
Well, interesting. By the way, I will take full responsibility for being non-compliant.
Yeah, we'll dock your pay. We'll
take exactly. Oh, I hadn't appreciated that. The connection between these stories is that they are, it seems to me, emblematic or indicative of a trend of moving, if you will, knowledge and intelligence onto devices in a fundamentally different way. Until about 6 months ago, I think, PDAs and tablet computers were viewed as the, province of the techie toy segment and, a few early adopters. And now we're starting to see stories like, I think it was a small town in Connecticut issuing tablet computers to all of its senior officials and eliminating the distribution of briefing books. The VA story, interestingly, was driven by the medical community saying, we don't want to have to carry large files or depend on the potential inaccuracy or lack of currency of medical information in paper files. The paperless cockpit, it's a fascinating story because it means not only that pilots won't have to carry 40-pound satchels of manuals, but they'll have a reasonable assurance that the stuff that they're carrying is accurate, which is as important as lightening their physical burden. I think we're starting to see a shift. We're starting to see it, I think, in a few school systems where textbooks are moving from paper to electronic form. I hate to use cliches like sea change, but something is happening. I think we're reaching a tipping point where this technology, whether it's a PDA or a tablet computer, is becoming central to how we interact with, another cliche, the knowledge base on which we rely, that I don't think any of us fully appreciated when this technology first came out.
Scott, this is a part of this that I thought was really cool, this paperless cockpit concept, because it really quantifies the usefulness for these technology tools in the federal government. Because Frank's right, up until recently, a lot of people would say, well, there's no reason for me to put these on my network. They don't really contribute anything to the enterprise. It's just people messing around with apps and stuff. Alaska Airlines received FAA approval in May to permit its pilots to consult digital flight systems and performance manuals on the iPad, cutting about 25 pounds of paper from each flight bag, as Frank mentioned. The e-manuals include hyperlinks and color graphics to help pilots find information quickly and easily, and pilots don't have to go through the tedium of updating the manuals by swapping out old pages with new ones because updates are downloaded automatically. It seems to me that any time that you can ensure automation in any kind of an information update process or whatever, you reduce human error and you reduce potentially a lot of other problems like issues with human life and resources. And that seems to, when you're talking about those things, those go to the core of what a number of federal agencies do.
The maturation of technology in the last 5 years, certainly 10, but let's say five, with applications and commercial off-the-shelf technologies has just changed so dramatically. Smartphones, tablets, but it's really not about the hardware. It's about the combination of the solution set and being able to do quick downloads. You know, years ago, the compression that wasn't there, the security, the cybersecurity element wasn't there, lots of different things, and it is today. And it's just getting faster and better quality, the image when the screens are better. And you're right, why would a student on one side need to carry lots of books when they can carry a 2-pound, 3-pound notebook and have thousands of documents at their disposal? A pilot, the same thing, or a doctor, a nurse in a medical institution. It just makes sense. And the wireless capabilities there, the connection points are there, and it really is the world's moving to it. And if we look at the younger people that are in school today, that is their world. They're very comfortable with texting and using everything from computers. So I'm glad to see that the sea change, as Frank said, is happening, and it is real.
Now, your story 2, I guess we'll call it 2A, since you're only allowed to have one story number 2, Frank Reeder. I'm giving you
I'm going to get
I'm not going to make a finger
he's
joke
using
there.
His index finger.
It's the index finger. It's the appropriate one, even for the radio. The other story that you have is number 2 this week is about Roger Baker announcing that iPhones and iPads will be able to connect to the VA network. And based on what your story about the paperless cockpit says, you mentioned just briefly, but talk about the service implications for the VA hospitals in particular, but the more broad VA network with people being able to get these devices on there.
Yeah, the backstory on this, and this is also relatively recent, was that as recently as 2008, 2009, the folks who ran the infrastructure were very worried that people were carrying BlackBerries and devices that they couldn't properly secure. So there was a control element here. And so that the fact what the VA story tells us is really twofold. One is Roger, who certainly is among the forefront of the intelligently but still early adopters of technology, has pushed that system to accept a technology that the folks in what used to be the raised floor rooms were particularly afraid of. But also, and I think you named it earlier, and it came up in the previous conversation, the capability that this gives the medical practitioners is just stunning. And so the combination of efficiencies and having more current, more reliable data at their fingertips I think this is just the beginning. I'm not smart enough to see what the next wave of applications is. You know, certainly in airline safety and delivery of medical services is fairly obvious. But I'm anxious to see the next chapter to see what the stories will be probably 6 months or a year from now, not 10 years from now.
Here's the difference in approach with this, that the way the VA is doing it, though, that from the way other agencies might have approached it in the past. Last December, VA discovered 4 orthopedic residents at its Chicago hospital had used a Yahoo.com online calendar that contained information on more than 1,000 patients. At the same time, Baker said the department discovered that 8 other hospitals use Google Docs, which features online spreadsheets, word processing programs, and presentation software to store patient information. Now, I'm sure that the people who did that had some kind of, there was some action there about the fact that they used those without authorization. But it seems to me that the IT team at the VA said, you know what? People are going to do this anyway. How can we do this in a secure manner? What tools can we provide them to still be able to do what they need to do and want to do if the ultimate goal is not just to be the IT shop, but to help the entire organization meet the mission of the agency, which is to serve vets?
I think it's the only way you scale as well. You're talking about, I believe the VA has 22 VISN regions. They're serving millions of patients daily. Why wouldn't they have a scalable solution set, and why not use these types of technologies? It just makes perfect sense that the maturation of these technologies is real, and it's current, and it's only getting better. And it goes to the application as well. Applications are being built all the time, and they are scalable, and they are secure, and they do a better job than anything we've had before.
Frank Reeder's story number two is prime story, is the paperless cockpit from the New York Times, and also about the VA story about iPads and iPhones coming to the VA network. Scott Friedlander has also broken the law this week and chosen two stories for his number two slot. We'll talk about those when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Drugged, driving, and dead. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Driving while high is a good way to get laid low. At the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation in Calverton, Maryland, Eduardo Romano and Robert Vos saw this in federal data on drug tests on drivers in fatal crashes. Dr. Vos.
Drugs were more frequent in fatally injured drivers in single vehicle crashes. About 25% had a drug in their system.
Vos says stimulants such as amphetamines were linked to all types of crash deaths, including speeding, not paying attention, and not wearing seat belts. But he says other drugs, notably marijuana, also were implicated in fatal wrecks. The report in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Luke McCormick is the CIO of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He says a new approach to oversight is helping to create a closer relationship with their agency customers.
We've put together a governance structure so that we have much more closer to the ground type governance, I'd like to call it, where we're segmenting that by business area within ICE and allowing much more interaction about decision-making authority on the various projects.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Little of the sun's energy reaches any one particular spot, so solar energy panels need to take up a lot of space. That's why researchers are looking at nature for new ideas. Man-made solar cells are actually more efficient than plant cells at converting the sun's energy to useful forms, says Robert Blankenship, a Washington University and St. Louis professor. The problem is catching the rays. So Blankenship is studying light harvesting systems called chlorosomes in photosynthetic bacteria.
The system is simple in terms of the number of components that it has, yet it is very powerful in terms of light-absorbing ability.
Chlorosomes are sort of like satellite dishes, but collect and funnel solar rays instead of TV signals.
The idea is not to put chlorosome complexes on everybody's roof, but rather to use the principles that we find out for how these things work to then design completely artificial systems.
More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. The most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by Scott Friedlander and Frank Reeder. They've ranked their stories in order, and we're counting them down on the Federal News Countdown. And we're up to number two. And as I mentioned, Scott Friedlander has also, in addition to Frank Reeder, failed to follow the rules, which is that you choose one story for each slot. You've got two also in your number two slot. You didn't coordinate this ahead of time, though,
no,
right?
No, great minds. Huh?
Okay, I
absolutely
guess. Your choices for number two, Scott, are Scotland Yard says we've arrested the Lulzsec spokesman. And the other one is death toll rises dramatically in the Norway shooting. How are these connected to each other, and how are they connected to what the federal government has to do?
So it's interesting. I didn't see Frank's stories, and I certainly didn't know he picked two in his second. But
I'm still not convinced of that, by the way. I'm enough of a conspiracy theorist that
his third story, the one he went first with, was about cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. I pulled these two stories both overseas, and they were both very, what I believe, are very critical to our future. It's physical security and cybersecurity, and the importance of both.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get into the first one, if you get into this Lulzsec, these are teenagers that were arrested. They have caused great damage, however you want to look at it, but they've shut down public broadcasting services, Fox News. They've done hacking in several areas, Sony Pictures Entertainment, and they've passwords getting out, email addresses getting out. In one case, Arizona police force, through a protest, they shut down the website. And what's happening, I mean, the ability to get sensitive information, number one, get personal information, medical information, it's going on a lot, as we know. And so cyber is just a huge threat that we have to be vigilant on and make sure the not only the intelligence community, but industry. Because just imagine if this happened in our banking systems, mm-hmm. which it does, but if it was too prevalent, it could disrupt our economy in a significant way.
I had an interesting experience about this whole issue, Frank, with a friend of yours. Karen Evans was on the show a while back and talking about the cybersecurity challenge that you were both involved with. And we had, I believe it was last year's winner, talking about what the experience that he's had. And about 15 minutes after he was on the show, he sent me an email and he said, by the way, I've gone through your website, and he listed this long list of vulnerabilities in our website, which we've now since obviously corrected. But what shocked me about that was not just the speed at which he was able to find these, but the fact that we certainly didn't set out to create a vulnerable website. Sony Entertainment certainly didn't do that. Fox News, PBS, the Church of Scientology, Visa and MasterCard, some of these sites that have been penetrated, they think that they're conducting business in a secure way, and then they find out they're not. And unfortunately, in some of these cases, thanks to this guy, they're finding it out the hard way.
That's right.
It's really amazing to me.
And just imagine if you take that to a whole different level and you start taking it to the financial markets,
mm-hmm.
and our government agencies, and which is going on, But the question is, can we stop it? And we have to stop it. Mm-hmm. There's no alternative, because the catastrophic element of it would hurt us, the economy, and many other things.
And then the physical security component of this is what you're pointing out here with the story about Norway, right?
So how horrible. Roughly 80 people died. How many were injured? And it was two elements. There was a bombing element within the city, and then there was a shooting prior, and that was after, and that happened in a more wooded area, camping area. Like, what they did call out is they saw this. There was the suspect was arrested, but 1 to 2 hours prior, they did identify. They observed somebody in Oslo before the explosion there, and that's the point of, if they have smart cameras and if they can pick out certain things, they may have been able to stop it. I don't know in this case if they would have, but smart intelligent software tied to camera technology, with the quality of these cameras that are coming out and the amount of them out in the marketplace today, I really believe that these are the things that will prevent these types of horrendous acts.
When we talk about smart cameras, though, Frank, I'm sure that privacy people are going to just go bananas. And I wonder if in 2011, in the culture, the kind of culture that we live in, that something like this can happen. And since the technology is available, is there really such a thing when you're out in public anyway? Is there such a thing as privacy anymore?
Well, I mean, you named it and anticipated my comment, which is that Norwegians are struggling with it today. They have, together with most of the Scandinavian countries, among the most open societies, as I understand it. Their police, for the most part, do not carry weapons. We saw what the Brits did in the aftermath of the underground bombing. It's kind of hard to do anything other than perhaps engage in basic biological functions without being surveilled at this point. I think London has more cameras per capita than any place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation we need to get into. Certainly some level of intelligent surveillance with two provisos, and I guess this is Frank Reeder's philosophy. While I'm viewed as a privacy advocate, my view is that, one, we need to disclose what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And second, we need to have well-understood ground rules around the use of information that we gather through these processes. And simply talking about surveilling everything because we have the technology to do so, or and some absolute right not to be surveilled, gets us into the same conversation we're into on our number one stories.
Mm-hmm.
There is no middle ground, and I think there is a middle ground on this one, but we need, just as the Norwegians are struggling right now, to engage in a serious conversation in the aftermath of what happened there.
Scott Friedlander's number two stories of the week are talking about the LulzSec spokesman being arrested and the tragedy in Norway. And you can read both of those at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose, story number one from Scott Friedlander and also from Frank Reeder. I'll give you a hint. Great minds think alike again. You'll find out why in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Kristen Welker at the White House. A bipartisan solution to the debt crisis seems even further away as House Speaker John Boehner brings a new version of his plan to the floor. It will win votes from Tea Party activists, but is still a short-term solution, which the president has promised to veto.
And for my part, our administration will be continuing to work with Democrats and Republicans all weekend long until we find a solution.
Meanwhile, the Commerce Department says the economy slowed in the first 6 months of the year to its weakest point since the end of the recession. High gas prices helped force Americans to cut back on spending. The new figures show the economy expanding just 1.3% from April through June. And most people toss away losing lottery tickets, but not members of the Global Lottery Collector Society. They have scratch-off lottery tickets from all over the world and will converge on Philadelphia this weekend for a convention. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Kristen Welker, NBC News Radio.
If you drive a pre-owned GM vehicle and you've never pushed the blue OnStar button on your rearview mirror, now is the time to do it. Because right now, if you're not a current OnStar subscriber, you can try 3 months of OnStar free with no obligation. Push the blue button and tell the advisor you want automatic crash response, help in an emergency, navigation, and more. Offer available on 2006 and newer digitally equipped GM models. Push the button now or visit OnStar.com for coverage map, details, and system limitations. OnStar. Live on.
Instant messaging. Instant coffee. Instant hair removal. The world has gone instant. So why does it take so long for your hotel points to add up before you get any rewards? At America's Best Value Inn, there is no waiting. Sign up for our free value club at any of our 900 hotels in North America or at americasbestvalueinn.com and enjoy an instant 15% discount, room upgrade, and late checkout when available. We've got you covered with more value, more comfort, and instant rewards.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth that airs every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Hal Young, certified valuation analyst and expert in business valuations. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD.
Find out what's happening when performance falls off the center line, and I think most people can recover. I'm also a big fan of documenting these things because bad things do happen occasionally. Good counseling, good mentoring, early intervention, you can put it on track.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Scott Friedlander and Frank Reeder counting down the stories they've selected as the most important federal news stories of the week. And we're up to...
Number one!
And great minds think alike, both of you choosing stories about the debt limit debate as your number one stories of the week. Scott, your choice is from the Wall Street Journal. Debt crisis vote goes down to the wire in the House. And Frank, yours was from federalnewsradio.com. It's Mike Causey's column. And the headline, how would you pronounce that, by the way? When feds get, it starts with an F and it ends with ED, and there's a whole lot of symbols in the middle. You want to take a crack at that, Scott?
Well, all I know is if we didn't pick this story, you know, we would have been blind squirrels.
That's exactly right. This is just part of me as a journalist doesn't really see the connection to what's going on for people in their day-to-day jobs in the federal government for the reason, Frank, that we talked about off the air, which is nobody knows what will happen.
Exactly.
Everybody's kind of throwing their hands up. The other part of me thinks that there's not really much else that we should talk about at this point, but then covering the world of the federal government, at some point you do run out of things to discuss because there doesn't seem to be a plan. And it seems to me, Scott, from the feedback that we're getting from people on the website and people who listen and email in, is that's the biggest thing that people at agencies are struggling with, is there is no idea what might happen. When the shutdown was looming, just a few months ago, there was at least kind of a playbook already in place. You could go back to arrangements that OMB made in 1995 and say, well, maybe we'll have to change a few things because of what's happened in the interim, but we can pretty much go with this. There's nothing here to go with.
Well, when the government shut down, and Frank, I believe you were in the government as an employee, yep. And I was in industry, that changed the D.C. community for a long time, and it was a quiet, quiet place, so as you can imagine. But this is at a whole different level. You know, the government's changed 75 times, has raised the debt limit, and this is a different moment in time. But this surprised me. I went online and tried to pick the best story that I thought was the best or my number one. And 15,951 articles came up on this subject. 15,951. I didn't try to read them all, but I'll tell you what, it was surprising how much has been. I mean, this is major, major right now, and it is going to hurt. Interest rates will go up to some degree, and the dollar issue right now, and who knows where our ratings go and how catastrophic that will be.
The whole concept of this, and Mike's column ties in with the situation at the FAA, which is a whole different issue. But the concept of this and the implications that it has here, how do you see that affecting just the kind of the general perception, Frank, of what people think about how Washington works, even though it's not federal employees per se that are causing this? What does that do to feed into the misconceptions that people already have?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing in the polling numbers, I think the last ones came out over last weekend, was the public's perception of, for lack of a better term, governmental competence is at historic lows for very good reasons. And while there are subtle distinctions made between the behavior in the Congress at the moment, which I find unfathomable, and the executive branch, but they are subtle distinctions. It's the general perception that if government can't solve us what is in some senses a fairly simple problem, then it can't be relied on for anything.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, there are secondary stories, and I don't mean to trivialize them at all, around what the effects are on the market, what the effects are on government employees, what the effects are on contractors that we simply don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
We knew in 95 how to shut things down.
Yeah.
But there are no ground rules around what happens if we are in default. My worry, and maybe let me be slightly less pessimistic, my hope is that adults will prevail, that folks will appreciate that the folks on the Hill will ultimately strike a deal in the next 72 hours so that this becomes so that our discussion today will be, if anything, a footnote, and the worst won't happen. I am utterly stunned at our allowing ourselves to get to this point.
When we come back, I want to talk to you. I want to ask you, Scott, what you think of what we've seen so far and what you see as we move forward. It's the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Scott Friedlander's number one story of the week is the same as Frank Reeder's, both dealing with the debt limit debate, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
If I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language, with no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills, you'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
Profile America, Friday, July 29th. Legend has it that garlic will ward off vampires. More realistically, there's some evidence that garlic can help avoid mosquito bites and even lower cholesterol levels. And America's chefs couldn't do without it. Thousands of people are expected to flock to the Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California today through Sunday for fun and food. The 33rd annual event in Gilroy, which proclaims itself the garlic capital of the world, celebrates the midsummer harvest and features continuous entertainment on three stages, celebrity chef demonstrations, and a garlic cook-off. Each year in California, Nevada, and Oregon, 197,000 tons of garlic are produced, worth close to $200 million. Profile America is in its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort A.P. Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown with Scott Friedlander and Frank Reeder. And both of them have selected as their number one stories of the week, news stories that have to do with the debt ceiling debate that is going on Capitol Hill and with the White House. And one of the things we talked about, Scott, before we went on the air, was the meeting that Moody's had with members of the House Republican caucus last week. It looked like that changed some minds. Should there be more of that kind of interaction with financial experts to understand this? Do you think that would move more people if more of that happened?
You know, we didn't get to this moment in time with a $14 trillion plus $14.2 trillion debt moving up every day in the last week or the last month. We got here over a decade. It doesn't matter how we got here. We're here. That's the reality. So what's the vision and what's the plan? Mm-hmm. I think what Moody's did was help to come in and educate a group of politicians to say, look, this is the consequence. Here's some of the negative consequences that are going to happen if we don't do something and bring a solution to bear and then set strategic direction on how we continue to improve and balance both sides, because the government employee and the citizens of the United States of America are going to be hurt.
The sense that I got after that meeting was that members who beforehand were content with the idea that it's okay if we default, it's not a big deal, came out of that meeting saying, oh, now I see what this would really mean and how it would really affect my people in my district, so that I can confidently go back to them and say, hey, you know what? This isn't such a good idea after all. Are you detecting that kind of movement, Frank? Or?
Well, certainly, and it was. I was stunned last night when, at least as the chattering class reported it, the Tea Party freshmen, for the most part, are lining up behind the speaker for the reasons that Scott articulated, that they are coming to appreciate that the consequences of permitting a default are dire. And real,
right.
But that some of the veterans on Mr. Boehner's side continue to be reluctant to come up with even a short-term deal. I am beyond, as I said, beyond stunned, and as Scott said, at this point, I expect that we will have a deal And then I hope we can step back. There's a great column in Wednesday's Post written by Tom Friedman about the need for a national conversation around national strategy that goes much beyond the immediate question of the debt and the deficit. And I'm hoping that we can, once we're past this, get back into a more rational conversation. Hoping, but not terribly hopeful.
I saw that one, and the other one that I liked on this issue was Bob Samuelson's column in the Post this morning. It is headlined, "Why Are We in This Debt Fix? It's the Elderly Stupid." And it sounds kind of provocative, and it was intended to, as right. you read the column. It's essentially, he points out the fact that in 1960, about half of our federal budget was spent on defense, national defense, and now a vast majority of it is spent on subsidizing between Medicare and Social Security. And it's the same idea that we've talked about on this show before and that I've talked about with each of you individually, which is, you got to go where the money is, and right now where they're going is not where the money really is. The money is really in these programs that are now called entitlement programs.
And for that, I will fully take the blame on our side that, you know, I am, and for more years than I care to admit, a card-carrying member of ARP. I go nuts every time I get an email, which is only four or five times a day, inviting me to go to the ramparts and defend to the death any conversation. Against even having a conversation like the one you, Samuelson would invite us into. Mm-hmm. I think we have to be in that conversation.
What was interesting, speaking of that, is when you got into a potential solution, which is not approving anything and pushing out beyond August 2nd and going to August 4th or August 10th, there was mathematics done on who you pay first, such as Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and defense vendors, and that amount was $27 billion collectively. But, you know, it would be like any of us paying our mortgage and not paying the gas and electric and not paying other requirements that we have in our personal lives. And, you know, eventually this is a death spiral. It's not a good place to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good place to start.
Place that I don't like to get to every week is the end of this show, because it's always fun, especially with two guys like you who are really sharp, and I appreciate your time and the effort that you've put into choosing the stories this week. It's been a pleasure to have both of you on the program.
Thank you.
Scott Friedlander and Frank Reeder, it's great to see both of you, and thanks for being on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. All of the stories that we've counted down on the show are posted now at federalnewsradio.com, and coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose, applying the KISS principle to federal hiring. You'll find out how to do it in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's Federal News Radio 1500 AM, hour number two of the program right around the corner.